Hi, I'm Howard Schuessler, Principal HR Consultant for LGPS, a program of Lane Council of Governments. LGPS, or Local Government Personnel Services, is a statewide service provider providing the full range of HR services to public agencies throughout Oregon, and we're a public agency ourselves. You may remember us from when we were called LGPI, or Local Government Personnel Institute. We've recently developed a new training offering entitled Supervising in a Union Environment. The training has 4 or 5 modules depending on your agency's needs, and these modules are labor relations and day-to-day management and supervision, leadership and supervision basics, corrective action, how to have difficult conversations, and basic performance management. Today's podcast is based on or extracted from the 4th module of the training. It covers how to have difficult conversations. Let's get started. So, like we talked about in a previous podcast about corrective action, having the difficult conversation in a timely way when it's really soon after the event or when it's important is critical to successful supervision. Don't wait too long. Avoiding the conversations or kicking the can down the road may feel safer at the time, but it invariably only makes it worse and often results in undue anxiety for the supervisor and poor performance for both the supervisor and the employee. So in this difficult conversations module, we're going to talk about crucial conversations, the 3 legs of communication, participation, and trust, and we'll practice or model or go through a couple of cases. So one of the best resources I've found to guide us through difficult conversations are the books Crucial Conversations and Crucial Confrontations, and it's by Patterson, Grenny, McMillan, and Switzer. And it helps us think about why are these conversations so difficult, what can we do, and what are some practical tools or methods to help us. The authors put on 2-day trainings for each book and for applying the lessons in the books. And I went through one training a number of years ago, and it really was quite excellent, and I would recommend it. But we can't cover everything in each of the books in a few minutes that we have here. But hopefully we can share some of the solid practical advice in terms of methods and tools. When there are persistent performance or behavior issues, often it means that there's a need for a difficult and critical conversation, one that we have probably been avoiding. Often we need to have this conversation and we know it, and we've been avoiding it for a while, and we're already invested in some of the drama and conflict. There are 3 ingredients to these crucial conversations. 1, anticipation of opposition. 2, high stakes. And 3, strong emotions. We're typically at our worst under these conditions. We react to stress due to adrenaline, and we're in our flight or fight mode, you know, where our survival brain is working. There are 2 things. First, dialogue versus discussion. So dialogue is when we have this conversation and we're both you and, say, your employee, are engaged in building on each other. Discussion is when we go back and forth, reinforcing our positions, and it's our initial positions, and it's at least somewhat adversarial. Second, it's important to not let emotions get the better of us or to allow our emotions to take away our self-control. And this is a big part of emotional intelligence. We get so emotionally engaged in some discussions that we lose sight of the relevant or critical content, and we get down into drama. We lose sight of what we really want to accomplish in the conversation, and we cut off the interaction that we need to move forward. In conflict, our typical or natural responses are either to prevail, to win, or we become silent and withdraw from the conversation. We often feel compelled to choose between truth and kindness, but that's not helpful. We need both to be successful as leaders. So a critical starting point or a base for all of this is the idea of making it safe. First, by creating mutual purpose and respect, and then we'll talk about some tools for talking when emotions are strong and the stakes are high. The confrontational conversation can feel unsafe for your employee who may fear getting fired, or fear discipline, or fear loss of face in front of peers, or whatever. or it may feel unsafe for you in that you want your unit to succeed, you don't want the employee to be mad at you, or you're just not sure what to do. Establishing mutual purpose provides a foundation for both truth and kindness, and it should make the conversation feel safer for both of you. So, as an example, rather than saying, "We're here to talk about your performance or your bad performance," you might say, "I'd like to talk about our performance expectations and what we can do to help you be successful." Eventually, you'll get around to the specifics. Look for telltale signs that the other person doesn't feel safe or respected in the conversation, or that mutual purpose is at risk. And that's things like angry responses or the person withdrawing. Defensiveness. Another way to create safety and mutual respect in the conversation is called contrasting. So an example of that would be, "I don't want to offend you." And then you go on to explain something, even though that you expect could offend them. Or, "Our policy is," and you can describe the policy, and you can say, "What I have observed is," and you're drawing the contrast. To help mutual respect, you could also say something like, "I would like for us to talk about," and then share the specifics of why you're having the conversation. So something like, "I noticed that you came in late the last 3 days," or, "Twice this week, it was reported that you were shouting at coworkers. Can we talk about this?" The opposite is, and the typical thing is, "I'm really pissed off at you because you came in late," or, "You need to stop coming in late," or, why are you always shouting at your coworkers? You need to stop it." It's really far more productive to approach it in a way that is less accusatory and far more open to some conversation about what occurred. So one quote that I really like that makes me think about our victim and villain stories, which is important for these conversations, comes from Maya Angelou, the poet. She said, "A wise woman wishes to be no one's enemy. A wise woman refuses to be anyone's victim." So emotions typically come from the story that we create in our heads. The story is how we seek to understand and add context to the facts as we know them. We create stories to help us feel good about our own positions, and we do it even when we're in the wrong and we know we're wrong. We tell our story, and then we seek allies when we feel like victims. The other half of a victim story is the villain story, right? If I'm a victim, then someone else must be a villain. This is just not helpful for having a difficult conversation, even when we're right, and even when we've been wronged by someone else. Being the victim and getting others on our side is never going to help with the difficult conversation. This is an important part of emotional intelligence. I guess I can describe some of these stories as, if you're sitting in the office, you have a nice private place, it's confidential, you're going to have the conversation with your employee and you have it, and your employee is hearing that their performance is bad, they might take this badly. They go out, they talk to their coworkers, and all they're trying to do is garner support from their coworkers. "Oh, the boss is such a jerk, he's mean, he's this, he's that," and they're a victim. Or, I've heard this from supervisors, "You're going to leave the meeting because this is a problem employee, and you're going to go talk to your peers, the other supervisors and managers, and you're going to say, oh, this guy is, he's so terrible. He's really a problem. He's always manipulating," or whatever it is. And you might even, as a supervisor, talk to the other coworkers to try to make this person out to be the villain in front of his coworkers. This is not productive in any way for having the conversation and changing behaviors. So remember, when you're having these conversations, control your emotions. That's part of emotional intelligence. And really pay attention to the victim and villain stories and try to avoid them as much as possible. And the truth is, sometimes there are victims and villains, but the tool that you have in front of you is that you can try to avoid those. So what do you do in the conversation? Well, start at the beginning. Share the facts as you know them. Tell your story. Then ask the other person to share their facts and their story. Don't try to win them over. Don't jump to the end. Don't be judgmental at this point. You're just sharing facts and the story that you use to stitch together your facts, and they're telling their facts and their story. From Crucial Conversations and Crucial Confrontations, they talk about what they call AMP, or A-M-P-P. Ask, mirror, paraphrase, or prime. And this offers a practical approach or method for you to better engage the other person in a conversation, especially if it's not going really smoothly or easily. So ask. You can ask the other to get the conversation going. If you can see the other person is angry or frustrated or just shutting down, you can say something like, "Hey, what's going on?" Or "Tell me what's happened," or "Tell me what's bothering you," or "What's frustrating you?" The next part of AMP is mirror. So mirror to encourage them to engage or focus back on the issues. For example, you could say, "I hear you saying everything is fine, but you seem very angry, and that doesn't seem fine to me." And hopefully that'll help them break out of that shell. The other, then after mirror, is paraphrase. Again, it's AMP. Paraphrase, of course, we all know what the word means, but paraphrase, repeat back to them what you believe they said or what you heard. Give them the opportunity to clarify or correct. Prime is prime the conversation, especially when they may not feel safe and you're detecting that they may not feel safe. If someone thinks they're in trouble, they may not be comfortable enough to say what they mean or what's really on their mind. For example, you could say, "Are you upset because you think I've been unfair?" Or, "I'm open to hearing whatever it is you want to say." Priming gets better with practice and some intuition. If you can guess a little bit about what's preventing someone from talking, you can prime more easily. I will say one of the things to watch out for is when you're priming, if you say to someone, "Hey, you can say anything that's on your mind, this is a confidential conversation," you need to be aware that if somebody then says, "Well," and they start talking about harassment or a crime being committed, you can't keep that to yourself. You can't keep it confidential. So you need to be thoughtful about not setting the stage for that someone to feel betrayed because you didn't keep something confidential, or if they get up and they start cursing at you and then you discipline them for, you know, disrespectful behavior or something because they were completely out of line, you can't set the stage to enable them to be completely out of line or to talk about something that you can't keep confidential. Coming out of the meeting, document any decisions and any commitments that have been made. You need to hold each other accountable for follow-through because you may have said, "I hear what you're saying, and I understand here's the role that I may have unintentionally played, so here's what I'm going to change." If you say that, you need to make sure that you're documenting how you're going to change and you need to follow through. Document who will do what, by when, and follow up to make sure that people do meet those commitments, and be specific. You can't document general things. So here's where I think some of you may want to turn off your brains for a moment, but please don't. I think this is important. But based on academic research, I believe I can say that there is significant research that indicates that effective communication may depend on the level of trust within your organization, and the level of trust may depend on some measure of worker participation in and influence on decision making. I call this the three legs of organizational communication. And while I didn't get this from a book, but there is a lot of research, and I certainly, after this, if someone wanted to know which research I took this from, I'd be happy to provide that. Successful and sustained communication can depend on trust. If employees don't trust you, they may not hear your message. So no matter how effective you think you're being at having newsletters and sending out email bursts and things like that, having conversations, if people don't trust you, they just may not be really comprehending your message. Getting employees to trust you may depend on you giving them some opportunities to influence your decisions and have general input opportunities. So if you ask people all the time, hey, you say, hi, I have an open door. People come in and they say something to you and you never respond and you never act on anything you've heard, it's going to be very difficult to build trust. Giving employees a genuine opportunity to give you their facts and to tell their story helps build trust. It may make it more likely that you'll be heard. So when you're having the conversation and they're giving you their facts and they're giving you their story, be as genuine in listening to that story and non-judgmental in that moment as you possibly can be. They can be telling you a story that is malarkey or hooey, but in the end, you need to give people the benefit of the doubt in the moment when they're telling their story. So let's go over a couple of cases and try to see how we can pull together some of the things we talked about in the labor section and in the leadership section and in the corrective action section. So here's our case one. An employee who's a union shop steward has been struggling to keep up. Other employees are having to pick up the slack and they're complaining to you. To make things worse, the employee has had some trouble getting along with you and coworkers in the past, but nothing lately. You spoke with the employee once and the union complained to HR that you were picking on the employee because of her role as a union steward. So let's go through this example and see how we would approach this situation. And we'll try to pull together everything we've gone through in the previous modules and this module. The first thing I would suggest is prepare for the conversation. Get your facts and your specifics together. The story that you may have in your head is that this person and conversation are going to be really difficult. After all, she's really difficult to work with. She may think you're just harassing her because before, if you remember when you talked to her, she thought you were harassing her because she was a steward. So you're both coming into this difficult conversation, you know, with your own stories. And if you want to think about how are the stakes high here, if you're interfering with a union steward and their ability to be a steward, the union could file an unfair labor practice, which can be very expensive to defend for your organization. So this is almost a textbook case. So use the tools, have the conversation, you know, share your facts and specifics, get their facts and specifics, you know, really allow her to offer her facts and specifics and be open and genuine and listening. And I can't stress that enough. It's really hard to fake it. If you just go through the motions and say, okay, blah, 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 share your story, and you don't really mean you want to hear it, it's very difficult. Always remember to follow your labor agreement to the letter if you're talking about a represented employee, because remember, the union has already complained, and that they could get them to file an unfair labor practice, but there's probably no need. And don't let, as we said here, this person had trouble getting along with you and coworkers in the past. Don't let that influence what's happening now. So let's talk about a second case. So someone keeps propping open a security door to the police department. You made some signs with a marker and a piece of paper that says, "Don't prop open the door," only to come back several times and see the signs gone and the door open. You finally caught the culprit. It's an employee, so what are you going to do? Again, I'm going to go through all the modules. So what does the contract say? Assume that this is a represented employee. Think about the 7 tests of just cause. Does this meet all of them? You know, does the employee know what rule they're violating? Are they aware that there'd be consequences to this action? Have you investigated it? And so on. Go down through the list of all the 7 tests. Is this the case of a great employee needing some motivation, really? Or is this a critical rule violation and it really does require corrective action so that even your approach to the conversation changes? And obviously, in this case, it's a rule violation. So just coaching is not going to be adequate, even if this is your best employee. Just coaching is probably not appropriate because this is a serious rule violation. What stories do you have in your head about this employee that might affect the difficult conversation? Is this a good employee? Is it a bad employee? Is it someone who has a history of being rebellious, or is it someone who has a history of anything in your mind, so that you have some history with this person? Plan for your talk. Have it in a safe and confidential place, allowing for, that confidentiality, and so that no one is embarrassed. When you're done with the conversation, document and follow up. And of course, if the documentation includes some form of discipline, make sure that you're following your contract. And if the discipline has an economic sanction of any kind, you'd probably want to check with your HR manager or director, or your city attorney or your agency attorney, and if you use CIS. So this wraps up our podcast on having difficult conversations. We plowed through this content in somewhere around 20 minutes. The authors of Crucial Conversations and Crucial Confrontations offer two-day courses for each book, so obviously I don't really have to say, but we did not go into great detail or depth on these subjects, and it will be valuable to go into more detail if you really want to learn the tools. I would encourage you to think about the tools and the methods, prepare for the conversations, and practice using these tools and methods. Perhaps you could try what I'll call a crucialish conversation, where the stakes aren't, the stakes aren't quite so high, or the risk isn't quite so high, to really practice the tools. Performance discussions might be a good one to use to try some of the tools, because they're difficult conversations, but usually not as difficult as, say, discipline-oriented or really, conduct issues. So with that, I want to say thank you on behalf of LGPS. We always look forward to providing you with service. The phone number for LGPS to reach out, or first the email address, is asklgps@lcog.org. And the phone number is 541-682-4283, and simply ask for some help for LGPS. So thank you very much.